See, those of you watching, you don't necessarily know Marissa, but you'll get to know her. And one thing you need to know about her is that I didn't know that the animation was supposed to start. And I know what she'll say. I gave you visual updates, but I don't pay attention. And that's what you need to know about me. Anyway, Marissa, you're the best. Anyway, you'll meet Marissa eventually. Everybody, welcome to the Damage Report. It's on Friday and we're live, whether I'm acting like we are or not. Brett Ehrlich, how's it going?
I too missed the countdown. And the best part is Marissa is the, like, there's three windows. So two of them are small and one of them is big. So it's split on the bottom and one. And I did it this way so I wouldn't miss it. She's just like very prominently featured on the screen. And I still missed it too.
Well, I only have two. So I have smaller previews of people. But like, as soon as I called her out, I saw in the tiny preview, she went, because why would a host of a show do that to their employees? These are all good questions. Perhaps we'll figure out some answers as we go through the show.
Super weird to call her your employee, John. She works for TYT.
That is a very good point. That is a very good point. Okay, I end up being the bad guy, as you would expect, actually.
She could have you fired.
It'll end up happening someday. I look forward to it. Bring your best, Marissa. Anyway, okay, so today's gonna be a great show. Because it's Friday and because I'm feeling good and I'm wearing a shirt with little pineapples on it. And they're not pajamas. Stop spreading rumors that they're pajamas on Reddit.
I had I worked in the first place. I had to wear like nice clothes to go work. I was an Italian agency. You had to like wear a tie every day. And some guy, Raj, said to me, don't ever wear anything that can be described with like an adjective like this. Nice pineapple shirt. Mm-hmm. Nice elephant tie.
Those are
and
not
I look
the
down and I am
thing.
Wearing an elephant tie.
Were you also wearing a pineapple shirt?
No, I would never do that. That's ridiculous.
I'm gonna wear this because it's comfortable, okay? Anyway, welcome to the show. Great to have you here. Excited for Garbage People this week. I think it's gonna be a good one.
Also, I just want to answer your question. You haven't asked it, but your shirt has. I do like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain.
Both things? Mm-hmm. I never thought I would meet someone who synced up in so many different ways. Anyway, everybody, welcome to the show. If you've only been here for a few minutes, you may not yet understand that this is technically a politics show, but it'll come. It'll
come.
So, John,
before you continue, when does the Jimmy Buffett concert start? Like, when is the beginning of it? Do I need to find a seat? Did you bring the parent head stuff?
I made a conscious effort to craft a rundown that I think you and I can actually get through in an hour, but it's not gonna happen.
I tried to map quest Margaritaville. So if you could just text me the directions, it's gonna be a lot easier.
Okay, I'm gonna go put on a black t-shirt like I always do. Okay, so we have a few things we have to get through before we get to the stories. And in those stories, we'll be talking about the last night of the DNC, Trump's bonkers press conference yesterday, or rally meeting, I guess, technically. What could change a Trump or Biden voters' minds? Not much, but we know what it might be. Steve Bannon, there's some video of him, you know, related to the breaking news of yesterday that's just amazing. It's so good. And then we will be closing with our garbage people of the week. So definitely anticipate that. If you're already here, and I'm assuming a good number of you are, please hit the like button, share the stream and all that. We'll be, you know, commenting on your comments and your super chats and your tweets and everything. But before we get into all of that, I did want to let you know, because you're our live audience and you deserve the news first. We are perhaps, assuming that I can make things work, going to be transitioning after today's show to phase two of the Damage Report under lockdown. We're gonna be sort of under lockdown. The idea is, and I say this just so that my technical failures of the weekend can lead to me having to pull it back. I might be back in studio as of Monday. I'll still be alone. It'll still be weird and creepy and a little bit depressing. But I will perhaps be in the studio. So I know that it's a big change and everybody's, you know, been very used to the way things are. It feels like it's been 10 years, but I think the show is still gonna be fun. So we're gonna do our best to give you the best job that the best show that we can. So we'll see. We'll see. I gotta get some stuff set up and I might fail. So you never know, but that's the idea. Brett, what do you think? Brave New World? Are you ready to someday go back in the next 6 months?
Oh, brave new world that hath such people in it. You know what I mean, John?
Yeah.
If you can snag me some Soma, I'll be fine with it.
Is that one of the drinks that we have at the studio?
No, Soma is the drug everybody takes in Brave New World, referenced in The Tempest. And I quoted both just now, John. I'm a reader.
You have so many quotes. Anyway, I see a lot of people are saying, will you bring the board games? That's people's chief concern of the show, is what's behind me and can't speak. But anyway, no, you're right. And I do plan to. It's like, you know, I have that little backdrop with the books and, you know, my Bernie action figure and stuff. I'm going to try to integrate some of the board games into it. So we'll see. But anyway, with that, you know what? Why don't we do a little bit of news? Brett, what do you think?
I'm down. Why not?
Can you use a green screen showing your show? You know,
the truth is yes.
Could.
That would look so dumb.
Yeah, no, I don't think. I mean, I could. No, I don't think I'm going to, but good idea. Maybe. Maybe we'll see.
I do want to, before we get into the show, because it's almost over. I just want to thank John for giving me this camera of his. Goodness. I'm going to light it better, but now this really shows off the pure processing power of the new computer provided by Artesian Builds.
It does.
Get up to $100 off on your computer, entering code TYT at checkout. Artesian Builds. They built this computer. They can build yours.
Yeah, no, that it's quite crisp. I can see, like, once it goes through Skype, it's not quite as good, you know, just like mine. And in fact, yours looks sharper than mine. What have I done? I gave you the power to defeat me. But no, it looks very good. And yeah, so we're gonna continue to try to have the highest quality that we can, purely in terms of audio and video. The commentary on a downward trajectory for literally years, but when it comes to the audio video quality, it's gonna be pretty good. And with that, Brett, what do you think?
Yeah, my screen looks dumb. Does anyone else's? No.
Mute him, and I'm gonna start talking. Anyway, let's do this. Let's do a little bit of this, and then we can talk about Pop Tarts or whatever. Okay. Last night was the last night of the DNC, and it was a big one because there were some heavy hitters. You know, Pete Buttigieg gave his speech, and Bloomberg. We'll talk about those. But the biggest one, obviously, is Joe Biden. And I think that it's safe to say that a lot of people watching that were wondering, how is this gonna go? Is it gonna be a good speech? Is it gonna be a solid speech? Or is it going to help play into the narratives that Fox News and Donald Trump have been trying to make the election sort of hinge on, about Biden and his condition? So we're gonna give our views, obviously, but I wanna show you a little bit of it. So here's some of Biden's opener from last night.
Here and now, I give you my word. If you entrust me with the presidency, I will draw on the best of us, not the worst. I'll be an ally of the light, not the darkness. It's time for us, for we the people, to come together. And make no mistake, united we can and will overcome this season of darkness in America. We'll choose hope over fear, facts over fiction, fairness over privilege. I'm a proud Democrat, and I'll be proud to carry the banner of our party into the general election. So it's with great honor and humility, I accept this nomination for president of the United States of America. But while I'll be a Democratic candidate, I will be an American president. I'll work hard for those who didn't support me, as hard for them as I did for those who did vote for me.
And I'll pass the preferred policies of the people who voted for me, but even more so the ones who would never give me the time of day. No, I'm joking. Okay, so Brett, did you share my concerns about how it could go, that there might be some sort of big flubs or mistakes, or that generally the energy would be too low, that sort of thing?
Yes, there were a lot of things working against Joe Biden, some of which were Joe Biden, but the others of which were just the facts of doing a DNC during a quarantine where there was no one around. And that's something that Joe Biden definitely thrives on, is human beings. And he's a great retail, I mean, by and large, he's a really good retail politician. He goes and he's one of those guys, and Al Gore is the same way, where they just like look at you and go, how are you? And like, yeah, it's a little like too intimate, but you're like, I don't know, I'm good. Your eyes, I don't know why I find such joy and peace in them. and that's Joe Biden. But man, did he kill it! And I will. I mean, we can get into a conversation about what killing it means, but yeah, in terms of delivering the lines in a way that communicates something necessary in the eyes of many Americans right now, 100%, he succeeded.
Yeah, you know, in terms of that delivery, I think that transitions smoothly into our next video. Here's a part of his close, actually.
For love is more powerful than hate. Hope is more powerful than fear. And light is more powerful than dark. This is our moment. This is our mission. May history be able to say that the end of this chapter of American darkness began here tonight, as love and hope and light join in the battle for the soul of the nation. And this is a battle we will win, and we'll do it together. I promise you. Thank you, and may God bless you, and may God protect our troops. Good night.
Yeah, it's a weird ending. I don't know. Anyway, okay, so, but overall, the reason I picked that is while, you know, Biden isn't the nominee I would have wanted, and the speech was not intended to cater to someone like me, that is not the speech that Donald Trump wanted him to give. He didn't want him to seem like he stumbled a few times. Someone in the chat said he stumbled 8 times. Okay, it's, you know, a speech. You're gonna stumble sometimes.
He also has an empty stutter. Room.
Like, and he has a stutter, exactly.
The idea that someone born with a stutter can give a, be in politics is
exactly
a triumph.
But overall, he didn't fall apart. He didn't lose his place. He spoke with energy and seeming passion and, you know, compassion for what people are going through. He demonstrated empathy. And I know some people like Michael Shore, who obviously has paid attention to 100 times as much politics as I have, says it was Biden's best speech ever. I don't know if that's true. I thought Biden's speech in 2016 at the convention was pretty good, but it was definitely a good Biden speech. And it was obviously more coherent than any time Donald Trump has spoken in his entire life. And so for the sort of race that Donald Trump wanted to be involved in, this is not the speech he wanted Biden to give.
Yeah, and there's a great moment that's kind of floating around, and I think we'll play it later on TYT, is on Laura Ingraham's show, Don appears, little Don Jr. appears, and there's just an amazing moment where he's like, all right, let's get into it. I'm on Ingram. This is a safe place. I'm just gonna deliver my lines. You loot in person, vote in person. Let's get at it. And Ingram just goes, yeah, he really killed it tonight. I mean, everything you wanna say about sleepy Joe Biden, you can't anymore. Your thoughts, and you see, and JR pitched this. He's like, you just see the emoji, the smiling emoji turn into the frowning emoji on Trump Jr.'s face. And it's absolutely true. Now, they're still gonna say it. The Trump side still says Sleepy Joe. They try so hard. And the truth is, there's a lot of people who are going to watch Fox News, who Trump is hoping are insulated from any outside interpretation involving reality. Mm-hmm. But when people on Fox News are saying, Biden's kind of killing it, I mean, what? The amount, there's no insulation. Even though you're in the basement bunker, you can still hear the music outside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and that the context of the room that it has to be given in. I've tried to give credit, like yesterday on the show, to, you know, Kamala Harris, who didn't give as good of a speech as Biden. We got to give people a couple extra points because it's weird to give a speech in an empty room. So everyone needs to understand that. So but no,
it's a wildly different skill. That's the other thing that people need to know is it is a different skill in political communication. Giving a speech in front of a room is a completely different skill than essentially shooting a commercial, which is delivering your, going straight down the barrel and delivering your point directly to a camera in a quiet room. And it's the difference between like stage acting and screen acting. Like if you watch early movies, everybody's like really overacting, giving you like, I'm on stage and I'm just gonna do it like this. Mm-hmm. And that it took years and years for essentially Brando to say, I'm just gonna be small because the camera picks that up. And Obama understands that. Both Obamas understand that. Bernie can do it and very few others can't. And Biden, it's funny, the shot I saw was a slow push in on Biden, starting from really far away and getting more and more intimate. And that was just a masterful decision by whoever shot it, because by the end, you're right up in on Joe Biden, and that's where he succeeds. If he's not creepy, he succeeds, and he wasn't creepy, he succeeded.
Yeah, and that's the technique that they used last night with Obama as well. It was like sort of slowly punching in for the most part, and it was a little bit more dynamic because of that.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Once Joe Biden had finished speaking, I was left wondering how Fox was going to respond to it. And of course, they're going to be critical of him. But some on the network had to at least admit that it was better than what it had been presented it was going to be. So here's a mashup of a couple of the different Fox News reactions immediately following the speech.
Look, the other night I said that Michelle Obama stuck the landing. I think keeping with that theme that Joe Biden just hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth, which I think I got that right in terms of the sports. He had pace, rhythm, energy, emotion, and delivery. So I think that if he looks back, he's got to say that's probably the best speech of his life. And he really moment, and I love that. Now there was,
I thought it was an enormously effective speech. Remember, Donald Trump has been talking for months about Joe Biden as mentally shot, a captive of the left, and yes, Biden was reading from a teleprompter and a prepared speech, but I thought that he blew a hole, a big hole in that characterization. It seems to me that after tonight, Donald Trump is going to have to run against a candidate, not a caricature. The Democrats have had a good convention. Now it's the Republicans' turn.
Okay, so look, Chris Wallace has been fairly critical of Donald Trump in comparison to other Fox hosts, so bear that in mind. And he can say now Trump is going to have to run against a candidate rather than a caricature, but Trump is going to do what he's going to do, and he's going to try to make those same things stick. I just think that it is less realistic that that will work. If Biden ends up giving that same sort of performance at the debate, you know, relatively keeping it together, the expectations have been set so low that it's going to come off looking like a win for him.
Yeah, that is the expectation. You're absolutely right. And I would just, it's a slight distinction, maybe without a difference, but the reality is created by Fox. The reality for the right is created by Donald Trump and Fox News. And there is a struggle there. So Trump will absolutely do what he's going to do, but in terms of creating that reality in the viewer's eyes, like the Dana Perinos, the Chris Wallaces, are able to shift people's opinions at the margins. And in a layout like we have in America, where you can be up by 11 nationally and it's a squeaker till the end, like those margins matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And so I was a bit surprised by Dana Perino there, both that, I would expect Chris Wallace to say something like that. I didn't necessarily expect Dana Perino. I was more surprised by the fact that she talks about sports metaphors the exact same way that I do. That stood out to you, but
not even going to go remotely close to that.
I make the same sort of self-deprecating jokes, I mean. But anyway, this morning, I thought this was a great headline. I couldn't watch. What are you going to say?
I was just going to say, like, she's a bushy. Like, she's a Bush person, and she was a Bush communications director. So a couple things there. She's like, let's get back to, quote, caring about like the way this place looks And for her, it's not just the presidency that's been tarnished in her eyes. It's the pulpit or whatever, the podium. Yeah. At the pressers, that's been tarnished in her eyes. Watching Kayleigh McEnany go out there, like, she's from the Ari Fleischer, Dana Perino time, where you just didn't say anything, and you kept it close to the vest, and you didn't look like an idiot. You kind of just looked like a jerk, and she would, and people are looking like idiot jerks up there right now, and she doesn't like that. So that's probably part of the reason why she's saying what she's saying.
It might be, yeah. And look, that's a lot of what Biden is trying to do. Tell people, look, whatever you preferred about the previous time, we're gonna give you some of that. Now, this morning, Fox and Friends apparently played a mashup of positive media coverage of Joe Biden's DNC speech, because one of the narratives is that everybody's too easy on him. But then they had to concede that it was a good speech, so somewhat undercutting their argument. Although, I don't know, Brett, if you saw Pete Hegseth's like a Biden's talking about light versus dark. And sure, there's Marianne Williamson vibes to that, saying, what does that make Trump like Darth Vader? And isn't Comrade Cortez the Jedi?
He just is like, I just got a free trial for Disney Plus, so I'm kind of going through all the
stuff. Catching up.
That's all it is.
And look, dude, okay, I get that you're trying to sort of imply that you're tapped into pop culture or whatever, but it was Brad Parscale that was talking about the Death Star, and you guys thought it was so funny when Trump was Thanos. Now you're like trying to spin that on a guy who didn't even say that.
Also, Jedis are cool, man.
Yeah.
You just called her super duper cool.
It's the coolest thing. It's right up there with superheroes. Anyway, yeah. So look, it's gonna be interesting to see. I'm assuming that, look, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity are not going to continue that sort of like, no, he actually did okay. They're not gonna say that, obviously. But it'll be interesting to see if Laura Ingraham from last night to today, if she significantly changes the way that she talks about it. I would expect that she would.
There was a Vanity Fair piece or like a Brian Stelter thinks explaining essentially why you won't see that at Hannity. And it's Hannity does think that Trump's nuts. That's what it's been reported.
I did see that.
Staffers have been saying that Hannity knows that Trump's crazy. He just is like, I don't know. I know where my bread's buttered. And that's it. So it's all those suspicions seemingly confirmed.
Yeah, I hope that Trump sees that. We'll see. We don't know. Yesterday, Donald Trump gave a speech. And when I say that, I mean that he spoke. That's it, really. That's the bar. He is going to be criticizing today Joe Biden's speech, that it was off a teleprompter, that it was not good enough. When he does that, I want you to bear in mind what he was talking about at his address yesterday.
We kept the oil, if that's okay with you. We kept the oil. We have some back and keeping the oil. We should have kept the oil in Iraq, too. Remember, I used to say, keep the oil, don't go in. I'd say, don't go into Iraq. But I was a civilian, nobody cared. I was like you. So nobody cares. I want to get that mosquito out of here. I don't like it. They'll say it's cruelty to animals. I don't like. No, it's true. They were saying the other night, the shark. They were saying, oh, sharks, we have to protect them. I said, wait a minute, wait. They actually want to remove all the seals in order to save the shark. I said, wait a minute, don't you have it the other way around? That's true. I'm not a big fan of sharks either. I don't know how many votes am I going to lose. I have people calling me up, sir. We want to do. We have a fund to save the shark. It's called Save the Shark. I say no, thank you. I have other things I can contribute to.
Yeah. He does a lot of contributions. Okay, so I get it. I've had this conversation with Brett enough. I know Brett. He's joking. He's being charming, right?
Not anymore.
No.
Trump's finally lost me. He is, no, he's joking. It's just not reading. And especially if in your head you have, hopefully, you have this idea of Trump in front of like a giant crowd all the time, you could hear the laughter coming back at him. And now it's like, it's like the soup. It's like one guy.
God.
And that's it. It's so bad. He's so aggressively dumb.
Yeah. That was aggressively dumb. It's a pandemic, and there's been an economic collapse, and he's telling Joe.
And that's why, like for me, I've said it on your show before. It's like if you are so obviously, it seems like Democrats are angling for moderate Republicans to get them to come over to the other side. And until this pandemic, for those moderate white suburban Republicans, it was just annoying and the country wasn't tangibly worse for them. Now the country is tangibly worse for them. And those aren't the anti-intellectual voters. Those are the ones who are like, I want to send my kid to a good school out here in Naperville and Oak Park and Springfield, you know, Sycamore Crest. Those folks are not responding well to these statements. Those folks just didn't want the Clintons jammed down their throats. Like they'd had it with or they just stayed home because they didn't want to do anything. But now the country's worse. And even people who know that their stock portfolio is doing well right now, they know that it can't go on like this. And if he is, you know, going to launch these ridiculous attacks and do his tight 5 minutes, like he can do that on a different network when he's not the president of the United States. Like, don't worry. He'll still have his like last desperate standing comedy show, but you just can't have him doing it from the Oval Office.
Exactly. And some of those people that like, you know, they like the state of their stock portfolio are probably not that worried about their stock portfolio under Joe Biden.
And the Wall Street Journal was like, yes, confirmed, suspicions confirmed. Biden's fine. That's what's happening.
Yeah. And so he's, you know, he starts talking about oil and saying we committed war crimes. And then what do you know? All of a sudden he's talking about sharks and seals. And the thing is, from what we found out, especially from that DHS former, you know, chief of staff, this is what he does in meetings too. This isn't just a show for the cameras. This is what he does in the actual meetings. But anyway, again,
also just really quick, are you moving on from sharks?
Yes.
Okay, before you do, there was a non-tiny version part of the Stormy Daniels account of what happened, where she said he kept like freaking out about sharks.
That's true.
And they were like, it's all false. It's like, well, he just in front of his big trucks, he's talking about how scared he is of sharks. Oh, what a man.
Exactly. Big shark or big truck, small shark. Yeah, like the weirdly confirming the intimate details she gave. Like if she talked about moles and he just kept talking about itchy moles or something, like, dude, you gotta get something new to talk about. Again, he's gonna be talking about, no, don't worry about what Joe said last night. He's still Sleepy Joe, he's still Crazy Joe or whatever. He just doesn't have it together. You know who does have it together? Donald Trump, as this mashup will demonstrate.
And I see again the forest fires are starting. It's starting again in California. I said, you gotta clean your floors, you gotta clean your forests. They have many, many years of leaves and broken trees. And they're like so flammable. You touch them and it goes up. I've been telling them this now for 3 years, but they don't want to listen. The environment. Little things, and they laugh at it when I say it. The light bulb, those new expensive light bulbs. I said, what happened to the old ones? They're better. They said they were mandated out. I said, why? Nobody could explain why. Dishwashers, they don't give you any water. They give you not enough water, so they're lousy. So what do? They press the button again and again. No water. I let them have lots of water. I won't say the third element of the bathroom because they always just bring that up. So I won't say that, but you know what I'm talking about. When I take a shower, I can have water hit my hair instead of drop. It's hard. Right now, we are leading a war. That's incredible. But right now, we're leading in so many polls that they refuse to put out.
Okay, so there's a lot there. And we could have just played the whole thing. He's lost his mind. They were mandated out. And why? Nobody can explain. That's true, but not in the way that he's implying. I bet that they couldn't explain it to him, as in get him to understand why. But there were certainly reasons why. And the button. No, the toilet. I won't talk about the toilet, but you know what I mean. And then the water hits my head, and we're leading a war. I mean, we're leading polls against Joe Slow. Yeah, it was a mess. That could have gone on for a long time. But great job, Marissa, in putting that together.
Yeah, I do want to say, like, he's an expert on toilets because he's put the whole country in one. Like, I don't, and the ad that should be made, and it probably already has been made, is have every analyst on Fox News and every offspring of Donald Trump say he's just so slow and he's lost it. His mind is shot. all those things that they're accusing Biden of, and then just play that mashup in between them.
Yeah.
Because Trump is, his brain is jello, and Obama's attack is so accurate, which is he hasn't risen to the job because he can't.
Because he can't.
It's just not in him. I know his fans want it to be in him. And if you're stupid, you think you know everything. Mm-hmm. That's what they teach you. Don't act like you're dumb. If you're an actor, don't act like you're dumb. Act like you know everything and you'll seem dumb. And that's exactly what we just saw.
Yep. And there's an aspect of that that I want to focus on. So Donald Trump gives his speech, and most of it, weirdly enough, is about the environment in one way or another. It's how he knows what's best about how you stop forest fires, which is that you have to rake nature. And he knows what's better with the environmental standards on the light bulbs and the dishwasher and the toilet and my hair. And oh, sharks are scary. I hope they eat the seals or something. And mosquitoes, it's all, and we gotta steal the oil. We need more. It's all about the environment. And then he gets to the projection. So he had this to say, AOC, that's another beauty. She's the designer of the Green New Deal. She knows nothing about the environment. She probably never studied. If I asked her, how many hours have you taken on the environment? Yeah, that's a tough question for her. How many hours have you taken on the environment? You should learn more about mosquitoes and forest raking and sharks from the president.
You said this once about the grabber by the pee tape. He talks about doing it with ladies like someone who's never done it. He talks like he's a cool guy, like someone who is, it's a bag of sand, like 40-year-old
virgin. It's a bag of sand.
Like that's it. And he talks about taking classes like a guy who's never gone to them. How many hours have you taken? So this ties back to his attack on her. He thinks because he went to Harvard and Wharton or whatever, that he's a smart guy. That's not it. He went to Harvard and Wharton because his daddy paid for it, because he was part of a family that paid for it. That's why he went to those places. And he tries to attack. And so the reason he's saying how many hours has he taken is he's trying to attack her the same way he attacked her for going to BU, even though she said, challenge me, man. I got better grades than you. I will share them as soon as you do. Right. Yeah.
But you'll notice he didn't provide those grades. You'll notice.
But like it's like going after a pilot and then saying the tallness of the plane and like, you know, we got to use the doohickey that keeps you steady. It's like, no, the pilot knows, you don't know. And you just expose in your attempt to make the pilot look like an idiot that the only idiot here is you.
Yeah. And look, I want to give you a little bit more projection, two weird versions of projections. So remember, you know, the QAnon stuff where he was asked about it and they're just good people, you know, they just care about America. So we had this to say, this is not about Q, bear that in mind. They want to cancel you, totally cancel you, take your job, turn your family against you for speaking your mind while they indoctrinate your children with twisted worldviews that nobody ever thought possible.
That doesn't make sense, that nobody ever thought possible. That doesn't make any sense. Those words together don't make sense.
But the twisted worldviews that they want to, like, that nobody ever thought possible, like that's a great description of the QAnon movement, that people could be this deceived. I never thought this many people would be this deceived. And then he's trying to mash it up with cancel culture. I don't get that that's convincing. He's trying to cancel Goodyear, man. And I think maybe sharks.
No, he's trying to cancel good years. And we haven't had one since he's been president.
We haven't. He also had this to say. So they already owned themselves. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Daily Caller or whatever on this same way. But he decides to do it because he said, if you want a vision of your life under a Biden presidency, think of the smoldering ruins of Minneapolis, the violent anarchy of Portland, or the bloodstained sidewalks of Chicago. And imagine the mayhem coming to your town. That's a dark vision of a future under Biden that is already here without Biden.
And everyone I know called out the hypocrisy in that when it was in his ads. Mm-hmm. Like it was in ads and someone's got to test something before it makes its way to the stump speech or vice versa, right? You do the stump speech first. What works there, he obviously brings back, but he always has that section where he's just spitballing, vaguely remembering things he said before that got laughs and cheers and jeers. But for that dumb argument, that so obviously dumb argument to make its way all the way into a stump speech. And not just any stump speech, this speech he's making, it's not normal. And I've said, like, there's norms that are good and norms that are bad. And this one, there's a norm that you're, as a sitting president, you're not supposed, or as any member of any party, you're not supposed to do anything that conflicts with the convention of the opposing party. It's just take a week off. Mm-hmm. And he's not, like, no president does this. No sitting president has ever, like, taken, done a political news event during a convention. And he did it.
Well, and to further that point, what was he doing during Biden's speech? Do you know?
I don't know.
He called into Sean Hannity's show and did a live interview for that hour.
It's funny. He's such a sad little man.
As if any Hannity viewers were watching the Biden speech anyway. It's weird. Anyway, maybe the radio show. I don't know. Anyway, he was talking to Sean Hannity. Okay, great points though. That's as much as I can take of him. He's a madman and he's not going to get better because, as Obama said, he can't. We've still got a couple of months until the election. So the question is, how much room is there for people to change their mind? If you've already decided that Biden's your guy or Trump is the person you're going to vote for, can you actually change that? Well, there's a poll trying to get to it. The headline version of this is that no, not a lot of people are going to change their minds. Even the ones who say that they might, a lot of them are lying. But let's dive into it. So the first poll shows, what would cause Trump or Biden supporters to change their vote? So first of all, nothing is true for 71% of Biden voters and 67% of Trump voters. But would it be a personal thing or a policy thing? Turns out personal stuff a little bit more likely to affect Biden supporters. Policy stuff more likely to affect Trump supporters. I'm actually surprised by that. I did not think that the policy section for Trump voters would be that high. What do you make of that, Brett?
The policy for Trump voters, you didn't think it would be that high? That
if Trump were to go like to change to supporting some policy or opposing it, that would be a significant chunk of all of the ways that his supporters could turn on him. I assumed it would be more personality based things or identity politics based things, or so, he hates the same people I do.
So you're looking at 19%, like it's a big number.
It's bigger than the personal section.
Okay, so if you want me to like read tea leaves, I'm thinking maybe it's Second Amendment, NRA. Maybe it's like I've been attacked so hard for, one in five people thinks I've been attacked so hard for this just being a cult of personality that in the same way you doubt they'd ever change anyway, you're like, they want to give you an out. That's not just me being personal here.
Sure. Yeah, maybe. Okay, so let's dive into it for the candidates. For Biden, what are things that could cause his supporters to change their vote? Interestingly, the single biggest thing is 22% of all of the possible change is if he in some way changes his approach to racism. You know, death and healthcare is very high. You could sort of combine that with COVID-19. That would be about 15%. And the economic policies are obviously big. We are in an economic catastrophe, so that makes sense. But it is interesting that the single biggest component is something to do with racism.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is this useful for? This graph to me is useful for messaging if you're working for the Trump campaign.
Yes,
which
I
means
think so.
All the dumb Joe Biden, sleepy Joe is not what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to neutralize the Black Lives Matter voters by bringing up things like the crime bill, amplifying this, why did Obama wait so long to endorse Joe Biden? What they're going to try to do. That's the only thing to come out of this that I think works positively for Trump.
Yeah, I agree. But the interesting thing is, but they want to present him as a person that's going to defund the police and give BLM everything it wants. That's what they seem to be going with, which would make it harder for them to do what you want to do. And look, they could make both types of ads and try to target them at different people, surely. But I think that makes it a little bit more difficult that their current trajectory is he's in the pocket of whatever far left radicals want, including defunding the police, getting rid of ICE and all of that, even though he's explicitly not for those things.
Right. And they can make both arguments for, you know, it's 73 days or whatever to the election. They can make both arguments for a while, see what's working, and then adjust. And they're pretty good at that. They're good at both that and then just saying something over and over and over again unwaveringly. The other explainer potentially for this 22% is that that's just the biggest, one of the two biggest things right now.
Yeah, that's true.
The racism is a big thing, and the other one is COVID. And the two aspects of the COVID issue are death and health and the economy.
Yeah, that's true. So
those split each other, and when added together, are essentially the same.
It's also interesting, by the way, that commit a heinous crime would only convince 7%.
I think the reason that that's out there is just because it's a thing that could happen, but they don't believe people who see that are like, all right, that's not going to happen.
Oh, I see. They're saying it's just unlikely to be the thing. Okay.
Yeah,
well, now let's compare this to the Trump supporters. So I actually am a little bit more impressed, and maybe it's sort of trying to get out in front of what you said, basically, that like, hey, stop saying we don't have policy concerns. I'll give you policy concerns. But death and health combined with COVID is it's a huge percentage of all of the possible things that could change their view. My follow-up question to this would be, if I could, is wait, so what has he not done that he could potentially do that would sway you on that topic? Like 177,000 people have died. What are you waiting for at this point to have a critical view of his response to the pandemic?
So my interpretation of that is that 18% doesn't think that COVID's a thing, and they think that Trump is on their side with that. And if he comes around, and this is just a guess, if he comes around and starts advocating for shutting things down, then I ditch him. And the explainer for that, and the thing that would explain that is the same options are available here for Trump voters and Biden voters. But the Biden voters are more into the actual outcomes of Trump's mishandling of COVID. And they think that, I mean, I read this as what do they think that Biden could potentially mess up on? And they just don't think he'd mess up on COVID because he's been saying that he has a plan and sharing it since March.
Well, let me ask you a question then. When they seem to be, like you said, your read is they're saying if he were to start to take this seriously as Democrats are, saying you have to wear a mask, being okay with shutdowns, talking about it seriously, admitting that it's a thing, that that's what would turn me off. Do you think that that is actually true for many of them?
Wait, say that again?
So you said your read is that when they say COVID's the thing that could change their mind, they don't mean that he could fail. They mean that he could take it seriously, and they don't think that it's serious. Do you think that that's actually true? Let's say that you're right and that's what they're saying. Would they actually turn against him, or would they do what they've done with pretty much everything he's supported, change their views in line with whatever he happens to be saying?
I think they could. I'm fine. That second interpretation is probable, or that second what option is more probable because they have with everything else. Because he is a hypocrite. He has changed his positions, and no one seems to care. And we talk about that voting block as like 20 to 35%, crazily enough. And it hasn't really changed. It's eroded at the margins, but no. And that's true. And I think my interpretation isn't it. My first, which you described in the first part of it, is not at odds with the second part of it. That's how they're answering the question. And that's how I've always approached polls, is people know they're taking a poll. They know they're answering a question. They do so not, you would assume maybe because it's anonymous, that they would just answer it anonymously. But a lot of people know they're taking a poll and know that that this poll will be used for something, even in just like an abstract sense. And so I always see things like this where this is how they're answering a question to someone versus this is how they truly feel.
Maybe. So look, I think that these are the sorts of things that could potentially play into both what we would expect for the election, but also how the campaigns could run. But the overall there's not that many people who seem willing to even entertain the idea of changing their mind at this point. It's enough to swing the election if there was a huge shift in the people who haven't yet made up their mind, but a lot of people have made up their minds. Yesterday, breaking news, Steve Bannon and a few of his accomplices were charged with wire fraud and other crimes having to do with stealing the money that was donated to a charity fund to build the wall. Now, look, he's a grifter. I don't think it's a massive surprise to people that this was an incompetently run organization. The idea that they were like blatantly stealing the money to buy boats and things was a little bit surprising. We showed you the boat, the war fighter. What is really surprising though, is that Steve Bannon actually admitted to all of it on video. Take a look.
Stephen K. Bannon and Brian Colfage.
Welcome back. This is Stephen K. Bannon. We're off the coast of Saint-Tropez in southern France in the Mediterranean. We're on the million-dollar yacht of Brian Colfage. And Brian Colfage, he took all that money from Build the Wall. No, we're actually in Sunland Park, New Mexico.
What? He just said what they were doing. He said it. And he said it exactly what they were doing. Why would you do that, you arrogant bastard?
I didn't see this. That's amazing.
You hadn't seen that?
I hadn't seen that.
Colfage looked quite uncomfortable as Steve Bannon was telling that joke. Yeah, no, we stole the money. Colfage was in on it. He bought a boat with it, and now we're living the good life. But that's what you did. You just tweeted it, you fool. You tweeted it.
That's so insane. It's so strange though, like there's two, I don't know if there's two groups, but there's this I mean, I'm gonna sound like everybody who's been a socialist forever. But like there is this fetishization of the grift and the scam in the essence of capitalist free enterprise. Mm-hmm. And it's the good work if you can get it. Like, what are you doing? What if you're giving money to this organization, there are theoretically two things you value. One, unbridled capitalism, because you're voting for Donald Trump. The greed is good, Gordon Gekko candidate. Let's just do it. Screw the government. And two, you hate like brown people, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. They're the problem. I'm not sure why. Something about jobs that I'm not doing. But yeah, it's them that are the problem. And you gave money and both things happened. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, the people like Bannon and Colfage and Trump, they all view, well, maybe not even Colfage, he's just like, sure, I'll take it if I can get it. But they all view you the same way they view Mexican people and Salvadoran and people in caravans trying to find a better life in America, so to speak. Mm-hmm. They just view you as puppets and people to line their pockets. Yeah. So it's weird that there's no difference in the way they think of you and the people you hate. You know, they're both you're, but they're just using you. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, again, like similar to the last thing we talked about, like I wonder if when they discover that they got used, if it'll change anything for them. Because they're like, I don't know.
It doesn't seem like they didn't mind that Trump was scamming them with his university and all that stuff. They really don't seem to mind being scammed. And so what do you know? Their politicians and their media commentators are all grifters.
All right. So there's one problem with that, both with the line of arguments we've just been making, is the out that they've given themselves. When all else fails, which is deep state.
Yeah. And they'll say that about Bannon, sure. That he was, but Trump is the one doing some of the scams.
But they were, no. They aren't scams, John. Mm-hmm. These aren't scams. Every bit of the news reporting on this, is it anyone? And they frame it all as conspiracy theories when actually it's just how things should work. Like Ron Johnson during his, when he's not yelling the F word over and over again because he can't get his connection to work, Ron Johnson said, it's so crazy. These Democrats have been trying to get mail-in voting to happen since April. It's almost too coordinated. And people are calling in with almost scripted attacks. It's like, activism? You mean having a plan? Are those concepts so foreign to you that you just want to paint them as like crazy ideas that are a little too perfect to work? Mm-hmm. Well, no, it's because decent practical actions are the enemies of the impractical, dogmatic, random ass dictator who's trying to get people to discredit reason.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening.
Yeah. Okay, a couple other aspects of the story though. One is, I just saw this on Twitter and I thought, you being who you are, I'd run it past you. So they had a scam that they were going to get a bunch of money by pretending to build a wall on the border with Mexico. And then they were so committed to the scam that they ended up getting arrested on a boat. Does that remind you of anything?
Yes, I've made a huge mistake. I saw that and I was like, he got arrested on a boat. Were there pilot? Were there like pirates? The answer is Arrested Development.
100%.
I said it like 3 or 4 times, like George Bluth getting arrested.
It's the same plot. Even the admitting it, like accidentally. Imagine what he must have said to Bannon when the cameras went off. Anyway, so that's true. Unfortunately, it gets even more twisted than this, because despite the fact that Trump and his spokespeople, like Kayleigh McEnany, are trying to be like, no, we don't know anything about this. Over a year ago, the Pentagon Inspector General began looking into a suspicious $400 million contract given from the Department of Homeland Security to the construction company linked to Bannon's group. The funds came at Senator Kevin Cramer and Trump's urging.
This is Fisher.
What's that?
Fisher.
Oh, the group. Yeah, exactly. And that's way more money than what we had talked about specifically for Bannon to be stealing. And the weird thing is that Trump supposedly has hated Bannon for far longer than that period, but it is there. And we gave you a preview of some of the Trump family attachments to this organization. Well, we have video evidence of one of them. Take a look.
This is private enterprise at its finest, doing it better, faster, cheaper than anything else. And what you guys are doing is pretty amazing. It started from a grassroots effort, and it's just doing some wonderful things for an important issue.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, whether he knew that what they were doing was what they were doing or not, that is what they think private enterprise is supposed to do ideally. Like, they got rich off of it. They did it better, faster, stronger, all that Kanye stuff. And it seemed to work for them, briefly.
Yeah. Daft.
Anyway,
they put the Daft in Daft Punk.
Exactly. I wonder, did Junior get paid for that? I guess it probably wouldn't matter even if he did.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter because this is
he'd have to
everything.
Know.
Everything is a government sponsored investment in the future of the Trump organization, which just puts its name on stuff and makes money, and it just puts its name on the White House and makes more money off of it. When they have to actually run a business, when they actually have to like make sure that vendors get paid for stuff, they don't do it and they get bailed out because they've never had to suffer a consequence in their lives. And we need to change that November 3rd.
Exactly. Hopefully.
My garbage person is the guy who shot Osama bin Laden.
That's it? That you're gonna explain it a little bit more? I'm worried. Did you have an issue with that?
Oh, good for him there. He was flying on a Delta Airlines flight and he shared the term "I am not a P word" while wearing no mask. And folks came out and said, this idea that he is a man's man. I shot bin Laden, and where I used a tool called a gun and wore protective gear to say protect myself and took a lot of actions to make sure people on my team didn't get hurt. But I'm not going to do that now on this flight.
Yeah. That is disappointing because obviously, like, you know, like the serving and everything, very brave and all of that. But this is a great demonstration of the limits of American masculinity and bravery, or at least sort of the traditional conservative conception of what it's supposed to look like. And actually, I almost went with this individual as my garbage person. I didn't. I went in a different direction. But so, what will you do to show that you're a strong, tough man and you're brave? You'll go and you'll shoot people and all of that. But something as small as, hey, could you wear a mask so that you don't infect me with a virus? Nope, not gonna do that. That would make me look like in the words of Ben Shapiro, a pee. But it wouldn't. It wouldn't make you look weak whatsoever. It is a weakness of these men to think that that would make them look weak. It is stupid and ignorant and small and selfish. And when you're all of those things, you're not strong, you're not tough, you're not a big guy, you're none of those things. Yeah, you did some great stuff, brave stuff in the past, but now you're being asked to do very simple things to safeguard people's lives. And you just don't have it in you. There's something broken inside of it. You just can't do that.
And a guy, and for a guy to go from being a quote hero to many, the guy who got it done to avenge the deaths of many Americans, being part of the apparatus that is causing the deaths of many Americans. And yes, he did avenge, he was, you know, he was part of the operation that avenged 9/11, but because of behavior like this and gross incompetence of the administration that endorses behavior like this, we've seen the deaths of what, 68 9/11s, mm-hmm. 65 9/11s. So think about it. It is so frustrating. And then this is the same guy who has called the protesters terrorists. Yep. Which is insane, and then called the people who the police, who any police officer who did anything but like directly assault them, the ones he in his mind retreated, he called them P words. He's a P word.
Yeah, super brave, did stuff that neither Brett or I could probably do, but there's more to it than that. And some of it just takes you getting over yourself. And it's so easy to just go along with this to get some, you know, conservative retweets or whatever. The dude's like busy trying to tweet through it on Twitter right now. No, you messed up. You could wear a mask. You could do that. You probably did that as a SEAL very often, by the way. Yeah. You did it then, you could do it now. That's not too much to ask. That's the bare minimum to ask. Not just for a SEAL, for literally anyone.
Yeah. He was added to SEAL Team 6's Rock of Shame.
Is that
an unofficial list of unit pariahs, according to The Intercept, and he was banned from the team's Virginia Beach headquarters. So so there you go. So even in the unit, he is a D-bag. And then also he got banned by Delta Airlines, according to his account, which good. And this is what's so frustrating to me. The same people who are like, well, it's against a private company can't be forced to make a cake for a gay person. They think that they should, that those private companies should be forced to let you walk in without a mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
And they could do, like, would you fly in a plane that there was a bunch of people not wearing masks?
Well, dude, I know a ton of people who work in the airline industry and work both in the galley and in the cockpit and or in the, you know, whatever the fuselage or what, I forget what it's called, walk up and down the aisles and in the cockpit, and it's terrifying. It's horrible, mm-hmm. and terrifying.
And it's a very small space with recirculated air.
Yeah. And people already are handing you like dirty diapers and stuff. Like, no, that's ridiculous. And they should take care of the people who work there. And that's it. And that's the priority. And again, if you think that 170,000 deaths is a hoax, maybe you are too lost. But at the very least, you can't get on the plane.
Yeah, you can't, because other people won't. And they get to make money.
Last bit is like the inherent irony of like avenge the guy who was a hero because he avenged people who were killed on a plane, endangering people on a plane.
That is true. I had not actually directly thought about that. That's a good point. Okay, for my garbage person of the week, it's someone who has this topic has ended people in the trash recently for attempting to destroy whatever is left of American democracy. It is Louis DeJoy is my garbage person. And he's been garbage this morning. He's gonna continue to be garbage throughout the day because he is doing his testifying before the US Senate right now. And he is confirming effectively what we knew about why he's there and what he wants to happen in the election. So he said in his testimony that he will not reinstall more than 600 mail sorting machines that have been removed under his leadership. Postal workers say the removal of those machines have contributed to major mail delays that could affect whether mail ballots are counted in the 2020 election. So it's been an absolute disaster. There's an LA Times article about dead animals in the mail and rotting produce and things like that. So when we saw his statement earlier this week about, no, I'm not gonna do anything more, you know, whatever, until the election, we wondered, is this going to be absolute BS? Or at least, what form of BS is it gonna be? Well, he's not gonna actually reverse those things. So the emergency condition that we're in, the disaster, will continue, because that's the goal. He said specifically, there is no intention to do that. They are not needed. But by no definition, political or just for a concern over the delivery of medication, no objective person thinks that they're not needed. They are desperately needed. But what they are not needed for is being there if you want to make sure that people can't vote in a timely fashion and make sure that all the votes are counted on election night. And that is, of course, the goal. And so they will remain out of service. We got 59 machines in Florida, 58 in Texas, and then it goes down from there. But these are in very big populous states, important states for the election. And so that was obviously dishonest. Now, I have a couple other things I'm gonna mention, but Brett, what do you think about the pick of DeJoy?
It's a great choice. I agree with you. He is a garbage person. He is, so his installation in this position is the same as Judge Doom and Roger Rabbit. Like, I bought the red car so I could dismantle it. Like, he, instead of a trolley in this situation, it's the entire US Postal Service that he's in charge of. So he could make money, not with a freeway, but with eliminating democracy in the country best known for it. Whether that's accurate or not, but like
Greece.
We are supposed to Greece. Thank you, John. thanks for your etymology.
Oh, you had all of your like your quotations earlier. I get to make one
right.
Greece reference.
That was a good joke. It was great.
Thank you.
Tell me more, John.
I will, because there is more. Okay, so he also said this. He said, I have never spoken to the president about the Postal Service other than to congratulate me when I accepted the position, which is interesting that you've never talked to him about the Postal Service. You just got congratulated. And Trump had said that he hadn't met with him. And in fact, Jim Acosta has a tweet saying just this past Sunday, Trump said he hasn't spoken to DeJoy. But White House confirms the two met last week on Monday. Okay, so he says they didn't meet. Then the White House is like, okay, they did meet. So then the spokesperson says, oh, but it was just a meeting to congratulate DeJoy on being confirmed. But he was confirmed months ago. Convenient. Why all of a sudden now would they be meeting about that? No, that doesn't pass any smell test.
Convenient. It's convenient that it is exactly the thing that you were on record for. Perfect, nailed it. We really accounted for all parts of that, didn't we? And yeah. And how long was the meeting? Because those two aren't mutually exclusive, because congratulations on getting confirmed. Don't know how we did that. Now, also, this will allow you to dismantle the post office the way that we always planned for it to happen. And there's so much nefarious about this. There's the incidental standard Republican approach to government operations, which is my argument is that anything run by the government now is wasteful. You should give that money to me so I can run it. My friends, the people who donated to me, so I can make, it's just a way to privatize something so that a private corporation consisting of like 20 people can run it instead of like employing government workers who can, many more can make an actual salary and living with good benefits and a stable job off of it. But also the explicit job of getting rid of making mail-in voting as precarious as they said it would be. They're fulfilling the prophecy that they made. It's really bad out there and just look for yourself. It's like, no, it's really bad out there because you made it bad. The US Postal Service gets everywhere. And the private companies that y'all are saying are so great at it don't. And they cost way more money. This is just a grab for cash.
Totally. And maybe I'm in a bubble as to the amount of success they've had in pushing this. But the idea that Trump on the one hand is saying it's gonna be a disaster while they're obviously doing everything they can to make it a disaster, that seems like, shouldn't we not let them do that? Maybe they're not. But in terms of your ability to vote, DeJoy had a little bit to say about that after saying he's not going to put those machines back in order. He says, asked what advice he'd give voters amid concerns, he says, vote early.
So that's thank you.
Nice and insulting.
I will. Okay, and that's early. The only option that I have now, thanks to you and your terribleness.
Yeah,
and
also could you plug the machines back in? That would be cool. Could you do that? No, no, just vote weeks early. Okay.
Right. Okay. It's like, oh, I'm going to pause all the things I'm going to that we were doing to the post office. That's like pausing the Jenga after you toppled it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
Plank, plank, plank. It's like, let's just put a pin in this. Leave it right as it is.
And so in that reference where I said plug them back in, you might be thinking, well, but didn't they take the machines away? And for a lot of them, they did take the machines away, but they didn't take all of them away. And some, they literally just disconnected them. And so you might say, well, if he's not going to be continuing this policy, then it is as easy as just plugging those machines in. But no, because according to Motherboard on Vice, USPS headquarters tells managers not to reconnect mail sorting machines. And we have a bit of the letter saying they're not to reconnect, reinstall machines that have previously been disconnected without approval from HQ maintenance, no matter what direction they are getting from their plant manager. So even if the manager's like, no, we can totally use this and we need to, this is an emergency, you are not to reconnect the machine that is just sitting there that could solve the problem. This could not be more explicit right. As to what they're trying to do.
It's the answer. It's the answer. The answer to not being able to go out and vote, there's three answers. One, we could have like outside courtyards to make it safer. Two, we can open the polling places for longer, alleviating the crunch on all that. Another thing we can do is younger, healthier people can volunteer to be poll workers because they tend to be older, sicker people, so to speak, closer to death's door already. And anyways, and then the third thing is make mail-in voting easier and more and universal. Just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. And they haven't.
It might help them.
Like all these states already sent voting applications. It can go. It can come back. We've proven it. We're just gonna do it again.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. But they're not going to. So that is why he remains this week's garbage person. The last garbage person of phase one of the lockdown. But wait, there's one more. And that is the TDR community garbage person. So we posted on our community tab a few different options that were recommended by viewers. And 16,000 of you have voted. And at the number one spot, Louis DeJoy. So bad, we all now know his name.
That's great.
At 46%. For doing that. Mitch McConnell comes in at second and 31. This is actually one of the closer votes for taking a vacation while Americans suffer and for everything else about him. 14% went to the DNC for giving Republicans way more time than AOC. By the way, on that, the recount has a great chart of the distribution of speaking roles going back many conventions, plotted against the percentage of the Democratic electorate that says that they're liberal. And it is a directly inverse relationship. Every single convention, more Democrats say they're liberal. And at every single convention, a higher percentage of the speaking roles go to conservatives. It's amazing.
Liberal is such a weird thing.
I know it is, but the numbers are going up. It wasn't
liberal is a barb from progress. And so fewer and fewer of them should probably say it. I don't know. Like it's a barb coming from progressives, so to speak.
I understand that. But if the options you're given are liberal or conservative. And 8% of the vote went to the meatpacking industry for doing nothing while workers got COVID. I'm glad that you guys are so focused on that. We were talking about it earlier this week. So thank you everybody for voting, the 16,000 of you that did. He is indeed garbage now twice over. So he's twice baked garbage. Brett, thank you as always. What can people expect out of Happy Half Hour?
Well, we got a couple programs coming up. Happy Half Hour today is Aishwarya Nag Chowdhury, who's going to be talking about, who's an associate producer, who's going to be talking about her experience talking to Noam Chomsky on Skype.
Mm-hmm. I want to see it.
Common Room tonight is a Boiler Common Room. The Boiler Room is our Pittsburgh contingent of publishers. Mm-hmm. We have made one change in the lineup, but it is still all Pittsburgh. It's going to be Aaron Wysocki, Hannah Gibbons, and Chris Houck. And all coming from Pittsburgh. The people who publish your videos, who make sure they got tags, titles, descriptions, thumbnails, on time, when it happens, how it happens. Mm-hmm. They're going to share their opinions on questions I haven't come up with yet. So be sure to check that out.
So that's going to be awesome. But everyone should also know Aaron Wysocki has been around like as long as only few others. Like he's one of the earlier employees. He's got the most behind the scenes information. So bear that in mind.
Originally it was going to be Mike, but Mike just got back from vacation and there's stuff he's got to do today. So he's going to be on a later episode. We were going to have Aaron for the OG episode later, but you know, you got to make these changes.
You gotta, and we're gonna. Okay, with that, Brett, thank you as always. Great to have you on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great to be here. Deep hugs.
The deepest. Although not much media attention here in the US has been put into it, the situation in Belarus has been developing quickly over the past couple of weeks. And I personally am very excited to learn more about what's happening there and what the future is likely to hold. And so we are very happy to have joining us on the show, writer, editor, and analyst Natalia Antonova. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you.
Glad to have you on. So we know that there are these massive protests that are going on. You know, the opposition leader following the contested results of this most recent election has fled. That's pretty much my level of knowledge about it. So for those who might not know much about Belarus or its history with Russia, the current state of their government, what's basically been going on over the past few weeks?
Well, Belarus has been ruled by the same person for 26 years since 1994. Alexander Lukashenko has been in power there. So that's longer than Putin, of course. We tend to think of Putin as this big dictator, authoritarian guy, but Lukashenko arguably has him beat. And finally, I think that a lot of stuff just happened to boil over this year with the 2020 election. Basically, Lukashenko is known for jailing his opponents, for having political prisoners, doing all the usual textbook authoritarian stuff. But this year, you have a pandemic on your hands. You have people who are scared and frustrated, and Lukashenko has been extremely, how shall I put it diplomatically, skeptical of the pandemic and of the dangers of the virus, even though his own population is in fact very scared. There's also the fact that inequality actually has been rising sharply in Belarus since about 2014, which is also impacting the current situation. And then what ended up happening is that Lukashenko once again jailed a political opponent who wanted to run against him in the 2020 election. And the guy's wife stepped up. Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, she just said, "I love my husband and I'm going to do this for him. I am going to run against this guy." And she actually gained a lot of support. You know, people in Belarus, it's a bit more of a conservative country, but you know, people were really energized by this young woman stepping up and saying that she wanted to do it. And it would seem that what ended up happening is that she was getting too many votes for comfort. So there were crude violations of the electoral process. It was just so out in the open. And
so when you just out of curiosity, so when you say that, I mean, we have an idea stateside about the ways that elections can be manipulated. You're calling this crude. It goes obviously beyond that. What are some of the forms that it came in?
Well, for example, people were trying to mark their ballots in a certain way when they were putting them in the ballot boxes. So they would fold them a certain way to show that they had voted for Tikhanovskaya, like her supporters were doing this. And you would see all these ballot boxes stuffed with these ballots that are stuffed in a certain way. And then somebody comes out and says, "Oh, well, actually, you know, out of all these votes, you know, Lukashenko won like 90% or 80% or something like that." You had people climbing out of windows, hiding ballot boxes and hiding equipment and being very shady. And of course, there were no monitors allowed whatsoever. And in general, the fact that he said, well, you know, the official polling numbers said that it was something like 80% for Lukashenko and then maybe, I think it was around 9% for Tikhanovskaya. Mm-hmm. It was just so galling what they were doing that it really, really boiled over.
And so, yeah, and I saw that there had been, you know, an international response implying that her suspicions were shared by, you know, election monitors and experts and all of that. Is there any way to know what the people actually think? Are there any credible polls that could give us some idea of what the levels of support actually are?
We don't have those. We don't have credible polls. We have some polls with extreme selection bias, you know, people who are able to get online. There's some Telegram polling going on. So people who were using Telegram obviously are more connected to the world. They tend to be younger, and those people clearly show that they were voting for Tikhanovskaya. Unfortunately, at this point, this is why I don't like the responses of some European politicians who are saying, well, we need to make sure that every vote is counted. No, no, no. You have to start over at this point. You have to do a whole new election just to find out what's really going on. But of course, with the current situation and with Putin ostensibly backing Lukashenko, that's going to be very hard to do.
Yeah, is there any chance of that actually happening? I mean, I know that there are these massive protests. They're apparently in it for the long haul, although Lukashenko has apparently said that within a couple of days they're going to be crushed. So what do you think the odds are that there would be a follow-up election?
I have no idea what's going to happen right now. I think that's the scary part, and also the potentially exciting part, because I think everybody has kind of given up on Belarus, and we just didn't think that anything was going to change there anytime soon, but it has definitely boiled over. It has definitely reached a crisis. Right now, we're seeing the protest activity slowly going down just because people are very tired, people are scared. There have been a lot of torture allegations associated with what's going on. We've seen Russian journalists get dragged off the street and tortured for 16 hours and having to be freed by their own diplomats. You know, so this is like a very serious issue. They're even going after Russians, which is ostensibly a friendly, very friendly country. So based on that, we don't know what's going to happen. We do know that one weapon against Lukashenko, one potentially powerful weapon that the people have, are strikes. And we are seeing some strikes. Of course, strikes are technically illegal in Belarus, which is why people who think it's a socialist paradise really need to wake up. It is not. You know, no socialist paradise exists where strikes are illegal. I'm sorry, it's just how it is. So I don't know. I don't want to make any predictions, but it does seem like this is very unprecedented for the regime. And it does seem that he's genuinely shaken by this. And whether or not he realizes that, you know, he should go, or whether or not he's going to get backed into a corner and lashed out, we can't tell right now. I mean, people who rule for that amount of time, 26 years in power unopposed, they tend to lose touch with reality a little bit. So I don't know if he's necessarily going to be making good decisions for himself and for his government at this time.
You know, to that, and not to focus too much on the pandemic, but we have down that he apparently suggested that you could combat the disease with vodka, saunas, and hard work. So perhaps a bit disconnected from reality, a bit.
And he also plays into this image of a clown, you know, because Lukashenko is somebody who was in charge of a collective farm back in the day. So people expect these kind of, you know, folksy pseudo jokes, pseudo not jokes from him. And I think he was really playing into that image. But as we saw with the pandemic, his people, I think, were taking it a little bit more seriously than he was. And I think that's where part of the disconnect came. They were just like, who's flying this plane right now? This guy is not taking a very serious public health crisis seriously at all.
So, so you have the protests, obviously, as you've made clear, Putin is supporting the continued rule of Lukashenko into a, you know, third decade and beyond. From it seems pretty clear that China has staked out, you know, where they see this thing going. The US has said that they have concerns about the way that the election was run, and based on domestically what they're doing here in advance of their re-election. I find that to be a little bit funny, but. Are they actually going to do anything? Is there going to be diplomatic pressure? Is the UN going to get involved? Or is this effectively a, you've got the people in the streets, let's see what happens sort of situation?
I don't know. I think everybody's waiting to see what happens. I do think that the support that Putin has for Lukashenko is not unconditional. We can't call it that. I think if they see the throne underneath them wobbling quite forcefully, they might, you know, go with plan B or plan C or whatever plans they have. I mean, you know, they've always got those plans, right? And I'm also, you know, in order to understand this relationship, we have to understand that Putin is also not some like magnificent chess player. He does act out impulsively at times, as we have seen before. So that situation is a complete unknown right now, I would say. And as for what everybody else is going to do, that's an unknown too. You know, I think that right now in the United States, we're facing, you know, such a big crisis of our own that it's very hard for people to focus on what's happening in Belarus. Yeah. But I do think it's important to pay attention, because here's the thing. Lukashenko is a guy who's acting a bit like a cornered rat right now. And we potentially have our own cornered rat in the White House in the face of Donald J. Trump. So if you look at that kind of erratic behavior that he's engaged in, perhaps Americans might want to look to November and say, well, are there going to be any similarities? And for the record, I don't think that Donald Trump is a dictator. I mean, that's a silly thing to say. He was in fact elected to office, and let's be clear about it. It's two different issues. But the mentality and some of the, just the way that these people behave, the mentality does offer us some clues and some parallels that we should definitely be paying close attention to.
Yeah. So the last question that I want to ask you is about one aspect of how the future might develop. So you talked about how the main opposition leader was initially jailed, and then his wife took up sort of the call and was received quite well by the opposition. So she's fled the country. She's been in Lithuania, correct?
Yes.
And so from what I have been reading, it is fairly clear from communications that she's put out that it seems to be based on what day it is, saying that the protests need to continue, need to stay strong and all of that, but then also putting out some messaging that seems to indicate that there might be some pressure being put on her behind the scenes in terms of people that are still in Belarus potentially being at risk. Does that seem like a fair assessment of what might be going on?
Yes, well, she was actually forced to record a hostage video, an actual hostage video, before she had to leave the country. And I think she was actually thrown out, not so much fled. You know, her husband is behind bars. Obviously, he's a hostage as well. And I also think that based on her initial reaction video that she posted right after she was safe, right after she was in Lithuania, she offered a very major clue. She said, you know, children are everything we have. Now, when somebody says that, what they mean is that their children are under threat. Her children had previously been taken to Lithuania before the election happened for their own safety. But I think what she might have been told is that, look, you know, borders are porous, the world is a crazy place. If your children wind up dead or kidnapped or whatever, you know, who's to say you're not going to be to blame for your, you know, for your activities? This is what these people do. You have to look at, you know, look at the assassinations that the Putin regime conducts on European soil in the EU. And this has happened over and over and over again. So I do believe that she must have had some genuine concerns, both for her husband and for the kids. Yeah. And I think that those concerns are still there, which is why this situation is so terrifying. And it's why it deserves a closer look.
Well, and of course, I'm assuming it is disconnected, but you're the expert. Feel free to let me know what you think. But just it was just within the last 48 hours that Russian opposition figure Alexei Navalny was poisoned, or at least the news was that he was poisoned yet again. And it's, I mean, that's happened constantly. I think the one time that I interviewed him, it was again, it was not that long after another poisoning attempt. So if you are, you know, an opposition figure in conflict with one of the people that Putin supports right now, that sort of news, I assume, has to be something that you're considering.
Absolutely. And we have to make room for the fact that, you know, Russia, it has a kind of like a middle manager's syndrome in a way. There's all these people who are trying to curry favor with Putin. And it's entirely possible that somebody was looking at the situation in Belarus and was thinking, I could please my master if I potentially poison this guy. Now, this situation with Navalny, this is the most serious one yet. You know, he's been, I don't know if he was actually ever poisoned before. I know that he's got, his face was sprayed with chemicals and he's been attacked. But this is like, you know, this guy is now in a coma. Mm-hmm. And there's all this activity around the hospital, and they had to fight to let him be you know, taken out of the country, taken to a, you know, a safer place, to Germany. So all of that, you know, it might be that the timing is completely random. I don't entirely think so. I think that there is this sense that somebody must have looked at Belarus and gone, you know what, these people in Russia, they might be looking to Belarus and they might be getting some ideas. So why don't we just, you know, show them that they should not be getting these ideas about protests? Now, was this specifically ordered by Putin? You know, I don't think so. I don't think he that's the thing about this guy, Putin. He doesn't really have to say, you know, kill that dude most of the time, right? He doesn't have to say it. It's just, it's all about, it's kind of like ruling by signal. That's his preferred method. There's plausible deniability. And there's also the fact that he knows that his vassals, which is, it really truly is a kind of feudal system that they have there. And his vassals will do his dirty work for him most of the time. So did he order it? I doubt it. But is the timing suspicious? Absolutely.
Interesting. Well, look, we certainly appreciate you joining us and lending your expertise on the topic. It's a complex one and consequential, and it looks like the future is going to be pretty important for what happens in that country. Perhaps at some point in the near future, we can touch base once again as things continue to develop.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Natalia Antonova, thank you once again.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.